So I'm going to start with the poem. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. So I think in a way that poem probably says more than I'm going to say in the next 15 minutes. And I think the poem's called The Journey and it's by Mary Oliver. And I've often referred to this poem in the last 10 years of practicing as a Buddhist. And I think in a way it's the poem talks about how we work with energy, or how I work with energy. So we're on a journey and we're moving on that journey towards awakening or towards enlightenment. And Sankaracharya talks about enlightenment as that uninterrupted state of creativity. So we're moving from a place of our old voices, our old habitual responses to the world, and we're learning to recognize the new voice, to find our ever more creative ways of responding and relating to our experience and the world. And in a way, that's my journey. That is the journey, in my opinion, moving from the reactive to the creative. So how do we do that? How do I do that? I do that through, the way I'm going to talk about it today anyway, is through my relationship with the Buddha Shakyamuni. And so I do that through relating to his life story as a journey, the teachings that he's given us, and the symbol of the Buddha himself, the symbol of Shakyamuni himself. So we've got this gorgeous rupa here, and I was delighted to see it when I arrived, because it holds the two essential elements. It holds the earth-touching mudra, and it holds the bowl. Yeah? So these two symbols are the symbols that I use in my life to help me work with my energy and guide me towards more creative, more awakened ways of being. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about these two symbols and how I use them in my life. So let's start with the earth-touching mudra. So we've heard quite a lot about Mara in the last 2 days. So Mara, the kind of evil one, the demon, all those voices that we all know only too well, comes to the Buddha or comes to Gautama when he's on that path, that journey towards enlightenment, and he's trying to discourage him with all his might to attain that state of awakening. And in a way, Mara's saying, who are you? Who are you to gain enlightenment? And in response to that, the Buddha's response is to touch the earth. He calls the earth to witness. He calls that earth goddess to witness. And Mara knows at that point that he is defeated and he gains enlightenment. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I feel like I've touched the earth quite a lot in my life. Yeah. Glad to be standing on it at this moment. Yeah, so I think that earth-touching mudra, it's a way in which we say no to those old voices and a way in which we harness our energy and turn it towards the new voice. Yeah. And I suppose in the spiritual life, there comes that point where you have a choice. We have a choice in most moments in our life, whether we want to listen to and respond with that old voice, with that old habit, or whether we want to listen to the new voice and be creative. And in a way, if I was listening to the old voice, I wouldn't be stood here right now. Because that old voice would be saying, who are you to be doing that? And what would that room of people think of you? And you won't say the right thing, and they'll all think you're rubbish, or something like that. So in a way, that's the old voice is always there. The old voice is always there. And it's probably the little girl inside me still shouting those voices quite loudly. And in a way, that's Mary Oliver saying, mend my life, you know. That's what those voices do. They want us. They're quite desperate, actually, at times. And we have to find the strength, that we have to harness our energies in those more creative directions. And there's something about touching the earth, just saying, no, I'm not going to I don't want to be driven by those voices anymore, and I want to be able to be who I really can be, or something. This phrase from Rumi comes to me, which is, you must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. You know, it's like, we must listen to those voices in ourselves. And I think that earth touching mudra has got me to where I am today. There's the big events in my life that got me here. When I became a mitra, I was 24. I didn't have any other young Buddhist friends. And I was afraid, what will my friends think of me? It felt like a big coming out as a Buddhist, in a way. And, you know, what would they think of me, and will they still love me? And, you know, I'm a conformist, so I'm doomed to be drawn towards conforming to the group. And in a way, I just had to touch the earth and say, okay, I'm going to be more of an individual in this moment, and I'm going to follow what I truly believe. And to an extent, being ordained, the experience of ordination was a similar thing, though the week before I walked to the Kutis to get ordained was a right battle with Mara, actually. And Mara threw every doubt he could at me. Doubt is a kind of camouflage, that's how Bhante describes it, and yeah, I agree with that, really. So self-doubt, doubt in others, doubt in my connection with the Dharma, doubt in anything, really, and everything. And you just have to touch the earth in that moment. You have to know that there's something deeper in you that's drawing you on. So I think touching the earth happens in those big moments in our lives. And it also happens every day in the little things. So, I don't know about you, but maybe you've fallen out with someone recently and... You're kind of a bit angry with them. Maybe you feel a bit blamed or a bit criticised. And it's quite hard to stop that constant rerunning of what happened and what you'd say to them if you saw them or whatever. It's that kind of anger that's in us that's kind of fueling. And I think there's a point where we just have to say, enough. Enough now, actually. I could keep running this mental story over and over and over. But maybe enough now. Maybe enough. Maybe I've done enough of holding the burning coal of anger. Maybe I'll put it down. And touching the earth can be a way of saying, enough, actually. Because the mind will proliferate endlessly in greed and hatred and delusion. And craving's the same. I'm probably better at craving than I am anger, actually. definitely more of a greed type. Maybe you're lost in that endless fantasy again. And after a while, it's like you just notice. It's like it's taking you out there, and craving is taking you out there. And maybe if you just come back to your current experience, it's okay, actually. Yeah. So maybe there's a point where, craving, it's the second noble truth, isn't it? It's the cause of dukkha. So, you know, there's a point where we have to say enough now when our minds got into those states of greed, hatred, and delusion. And actually, there's a kindness in that. I used to think it was me being a bit hard on myself, you know, if I was feeling like I was in an angry place or a place of craving. It's like, oh, that's a nice thing, just to let myself be that. But actually, there's a kindness sometimes in just saying enough. to those mental states. And I think, and we also do it in meditation, every time we come back to the breath, we're touching the earth. We're coming back to wise intention in that moment of where we want to put our attention, rather than what we're going to have for breakfast, or how we're feeling in that moment, or whatever the story is that we're distracted by. So every time we come back to the breath, or every time we come back to that intention to develop metta, we are touching the earth. So in a way, that touching the earth, it's a way of harnessing our energies. Yeah, it's the way that I work with my energy to move it in ever more, I hope, creative directions. But what I found is I need the bowl too. Yeah. So the Buddha talks about right effort, and he gives us this image of the lute. So he says, the lute, if you want to play a lute beautifully, if the strings are too tight, it doesn't work. If the strings are too loose, it doesn't work. And I think I have a tendency to the too tight, to the over-focused, to the need to get it right all the time, the need to be spiritual. In fact, mindfulness is about to throw us off my yesterday. I will be mindful, I will be spiritual. And in a way, that can just be a bit too tight. And while the earth touching mudra, I think, is a guiding star for me, I need the bowl as well. It balances it. And I think, I often say this, I think in the spiritual life I walk a razor's edge, or I try to walk the middle way between being over-identified with my experience and being alienated with my experience. Yeah. So the earth touching mudra is a great way to stop us from being over-identified, but let's not tip into alienation. So then we need the bowl to help us be open to our experience, be receptive to our experience. That's what the bowl is doing. It's just open and receptive. It holds everything. In a way, I am the bowl. I am a bowl. That's all I am. I am experience, ever-flowing, ever-impermanent, inherently empty. Nothing sticks. And I need that symbol to balance it, to keep reminding me and helping me be open. So thinking about, well, what does that look like? So like this morning in meditation, probably at root I was just feeling really scared. Yeah, there's a kind of little girl in me just going, oh my God, you're about to stand up and talk about yourself. That's really scary. And I think part of me just wanted to keep coming back to the breath, come back to the breath. And actually, I needed something bigger. I needed to be a bigger container in that moment. That actually, I needed that scared part to be there. Not in an over-identified way, not into having to go into every story about every time that I've ever been scared and all of that, but just like, actually, that emotion's there, that's got a lot of energy in it. Yeah. And if I'm just trying to bypass that, it doesn't work. Yeah. So you need to be open to our experience as well. Yeah, so in a way, the bowl is the sense of us becoming a bigger container. So being open, being a big enough container to hold all of our experience, yeah? Hold the joy, hold the grief, hold the despair, hold the ecstasy, hold the bliss, hold the whatever your experience is, whatever it is, the boredom, the neutral feelings, whatever it is, just oh yeah, that's how I am, I am. And in a way, that's what we're doing. We're trying to become a bigger container. And that bigger container is just full of metta. It's full of unconditional love. And in a way, I think the bowl's becoming an ever more important symbol to me in my life. Maybe through years of earth touching, I've developed, I wonder, a sense of more stability to be able to sit with the whole range of my experience. And so then the bowl is a way of trying to integrate that experience and bring more unconditional love and acceptance. And I think the bowl is a place where, on a kind of personal note, I'm developing a deeper acceptance of who I am and the things maybe I don't like about myself, or the things that I wish weren't like that, but they are. And that's just very integrating, actually, not to have to cut off parts of myself. And I'm ever grateful of that. And I think Both of these symbols, the earth touching mudra and the bowl, actually their fingers pointing at the moon. Yeah, they're not ends in themselves, they're symbols to help us guide our energy towards more creative states. And actually, at root, they are pointing to the nature of things, that all things are impermanent, insubstantial, and unsatisfactory. That's what conditioned existence is like. So for me, the two symbols really balance each other. And I get a sense that I use them to work together to help me find my own reference points, to be more of a true individual, and to be more of a full human being, open to all of my experience. Yeah, so in a way, that earth-touching mudra is me finding my reference points. It's me being a true individual. It's me stepping free from the group and the need of approval. And the bowl is that, okay, but who are you really? And let's be accepting and open to that experience. Now, those symbols may or may not work for you. Yeah, and I encourage you to find your own symbols. And Buddhism's full of symbols. So we've got hundreds of Buddhas and Bodhisattva figures, different colours, different mudras. So find your own. Find your own symbol. It could be the Vajra or the Purba that Yana Dara talked about last night. It could be the bell. It could be lots of other symbols. The sword, Manjushri and the sword. Yeah, so there's all those symbols out there. There's also, if you're not into the Buddhist symbols, if they're not resonating, then there's loads of symbols in nature. In fact, that's what the Buddha often more called on. He called on the solid rock that cannot be shaken. Yeah? Or he called on the tree with its roots, or the fletcher straightening the arrow, or the carpenter shaping wood. Yeah, so find your own symbol, whatever that is. And those symbols will change over time, let them be fluid. But, you know, I do encourage you to find a symbol that's going to help you to guide your energies in more creative ways and move towards being who you truly are. Now I'm going to end with a poem as well. This is called The Art of Disappearing by Naomi Shihab Nye. When they say, "Don't I know you?" say no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone telling you in a loud voice that they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate. Then reply. If they say we should get together, say why. It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees. The monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When someone recognises you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. Thank you.